On this week's 51%, we take two looks at matchmaking. First, we meet the most popular woman on a certain online dating site.
The experience of going on a lot of dates and writing the book really made me like hone in on what I want and made me know that I don't want to settle for anything.
Then we travel to Israel for a story of matchmaking in a more traditional sense. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, catch me a catch. Night after night in the dark, I'm alone. So find me a match of my own.
Lauren Urasik is a science geek turned makeup artist, and she's in her mid-20s. She's also the author of the book Popular: The Ups and Downs of Online Dating from the Most Popular Girl in New York City. It's a collection of essays about her life as the most messaged girl on the online dating site, OkCupid. She says before the book, she had started a blog and was featured in an article entitled Meet the Four Most Desired People in New York According to OkCupid, an article that appeared in a February 2014 issue of New York Magazine. She says attaining most message status was not a goal, but flattering. I asked her how she achieved that unintended status.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a combination of things. I think a lot of it is the pictures you put up, you know, having clear, recent, just like great pictures. And I work in the fashion industry, and I have been known to take a good selfie or two. So I feel like that has a lot to do with it. I also think writing kind of that sweet spot when it comes to the profile, like not too much, but not too little, and something that's unique definitely had something to do with it. And then I also think part of it was I had just rejoined the site again, I think maybe like a couple weeks prior. So when a lot of guys, they search for like new users. So I think my profile was coming up a lot.
What gets your attention, though? Where have you said, yeah, let's go out?
Yeah, I mean, it's really not about the message so much. Obviously, I don't respond to any of like the crazy ones, but even if they just write something like, hey, I'm Bob, like, how are you? I will typically just go to their profile and, you know, if I'm attracted to them and we have interests that align and they just seem like a cool guy, then I'll typically, you know, respond and then see where it goes from there. But the people that I've gone out with never wrote any like amazingly fantastic message because I don't really think there is such a thing. Just be respectful and, you know, like you're having a conversation in person.
When you went on the site, I mean, I imagine your goal, or correct me if I'm wrong, was the same as anybody else who goes on the site, right? Is to find people to date, maybe a relationship, whatever. But I mean, this wasn't like a writing project. This wasn't you like kind of undercover pretending to be an online dating person to get stories right for a book, right? This is just what evolved from a regular experience.
Yeah, totally.
Right? And so, but the fact that for you, it did get to this level, I mean, how has that changed your dating life?
I date every once in a while, but when I was actually like named this, when I was given this title and the article came out, I was dating a lot. A lot of it though was I was trying to get over a breakup, so that was just like I was just trying to get out there, and you know, everyone knows how that goes. But yeah, I really haven't been dating that much, mostly because I've been just super busy. But also, I mean, I think the experience of going on a lot of dates and writing the book really made me like hone in on what I want and made me know that I don't want to settle for anything. And then I'm also just very happy being single. So it's not really a priority to date for me anymore like it used to be.
So what kind of advice do you have for creating a profile? Because I think that's really, really hard.
Right. I mean, you really just have to think about, you know, the awesome things that you love about yourself. And if you don't know, then maybe ask your friends what, you know, cool things that they like about you. But, you know, I always say try not to write general things. Try not to write that you love to travel and that you're outgoing, because like the last five people wrote that. And, you know, it's, I hear from a lot of guys that they say girls write like they're sarcastic and witty and whatever. So yeah, I personally like wrote very random things. Like I wrote that I love Sour Patch Kids, it's like my favorite candy, and I like diving off of like high surfaces into natural like lakes and things. So like super random, but
that's super
little...
specific.
Yeah, exactly. Super specific random things, I think, over like a vast variety of categories kind of gives someone a good idea of who you are.
I'm curious when, you know, so you went on this as anybody else would because you want a date. And so you go on OkCupid and there you are. At what point do you say, huh, going to write about this? So this has taken a turn and this is not a usual situation and there's something to gain here.
Yeah, well, I had my blog prior to the article coming out in New York Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the New York Magazine article came out, I just got a lot of press, like, very quickly. And I was actually approached by my now agent, so she thought it would be a great idea to write a book. I never thought I would be able to write a book. And here we are. So, yeah, she was really the one who pushed me to do it. And it's funny because when you're writing about your own life, like you don't think it's like that entertaining, but it's crazy when people are now like reading it. It's only been out for a week and people are like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened to you. And I can't believe this and that. And I'm like, oh, that was just like a Tuesday night. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
I like the story, but of Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's also one of my favorites, definitely. Yeah, so I basically was dating, or I guess I can start from the beginning. I found a picture of Bill Nye with, like, throwing a peace sign in front of a Jay-Z picture on Twitter, and I retweeted it, and then the guy who originally tweeted it started following me, and then we were just kind of back and forth on Twitter. He wound up asking if I wanted to grab a drink. We grabbed a drink like a week later and we went on a couple dates, and then it just happened that he was one of Bill Nye's really good friends. So on our third date he was like, I have a surprise for you, and like Bill Nye showed up and I was like freaking out. And we wound up just like having a few glasses of whiskey with Bill Nye the Science Guy. And it was pretty awesome.
Was it great to meet him? Because sometimes people that you really admire and that, you know, then you meet them and you're like, oh no.
Totally. No, he was just as amazing as you think he is. And I mean, I'm used to, like, I'm as a makeup artist, I work with celebrities all the time. And living in New York, you meet people all the time, obviously. But I've never really met anyone that I really loved as much as him. And it's like Bill Nye of all people, but... So yeah, I got to, you know, I kind of felt like an idiot for 2 seconds sitting at the table with him. And like, there was this neurologist there. So I'm sitting with like a biologist, a neurologist, and then it's like me and my date, but it was awesome.
Fantastic. And, conversely, what about something not so fantastic? Did I read, this was the weird one about the cousin that showed up?
Oh yeah.
That's bizarre.
I actually, like, pretty much, like, the first, like, hour of the date was really good, and we were, like, getting along really well. So.
And then?
And then we were, like, drinking. I don't know if maybe his craziness comes out when he drinks only, but we kept drinking, and we were, like, we went to another bar, and then he just started, like, I don't know exactly where it began, but he was starting to tell me about like his plans to like buy a house and like support his wife and like have children and like have dogs in the backyard and all these things. And then he told me first of all, this is like, I don't even think I write this in the book. The guy that I went out with was like a white, blonde hair, blue eyed guy. Just like classic, like whatever, preppy. He wasn't preppy, but you know, you get the idea.
A classic all-American look, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going for. So his cousin shows up. His cousin was like, I want to say like Russian, maybe? And he was wearing like a pink button up that was like see-through, but it wasn't meant to be see-through. It was like so cheap that it was see-through, you know?
The unintentional see-through.
Yeah, exactly. It was like a dusty pink. It looked like maybe it hadn't been washed in a while, something like that.
But wait, why does the cousin even show up?
He said, like, his cousin was, like, just got in town. He, like, didn't have anywhere to go, or, like, he couldn't get into his, like, the place he was staying at or something. And, like, that point, we had been on the date for, like, a good amount of time where I, like, it was just kind of, like, a hangout.
Okay.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. So his cousin came, and I was like, oh, my God, like, who is this guy? He just looked crazy and was, like, weird and, and it's, I mean, this is such a long night. It's really a long story. But we wound up going to Benihana's. Keep in mind, the drinks have continued to flow. And keep in mind, I also knew that I was getting a book deal at this point.
Aha. So, okay. No, yeah. These are important pieces of information.
Yeah. So I definitely probably would have left. But I mean, when they were like, let's go to Benihana, then I was like, all right, this is going to keep getting good. So we went there and I wound up like talking to this girl next to me at the table. And the guy I was with got like so jealous that I was talking to her. And he basically like stormed out of Benihana. This is also after he's been calling me his fiance to strangers. He like stormed out of Benihana and got super crazy, like almost like schizo, like two different personalities. Like one second he like thought I was amazing, and the next second he was like super jealous guy that was acting like he had been with me for years or something. And then I was like, okay, this is weird. I went to go leave, and then he's like at the bottom of the stairs, like begging me for his, for an apology. And yeah, I mean, those are just the main points, but I write a lot more specifics in the book.
I mean, you're just thinking this is great writing material.
And this is one of the only instances where I was like genuinely thinking, okay, like I'm going to write this in my book, but I never write. I literally get asked. It's so annoying. Every single date I go on, which isn't that much, but obviously I'm very open about like what I do and everything. And I swear, like the first question they all ask when I first tell them, they're like, oh, am I going to be in your book? And I'm like, first of all, the book's done. Second of all, like, stop. I'm just going out with you. I'm still a normal person. I don't just like experiment with guys to like write about, you know.
Where do you go from here? Do you have any aspirations in terms of more writing or in this topic or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what I want to do is also, which also the book is a lot about, is just about female empowerment and like being happily single. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking to work with some other companies and start some partnerships that are in that space. So, you know, I get tons of emails from girls just saying like, thank you for standing up to these guys and like, you know, saying no to like catcalling and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, working on a few other things, looking to hopefully get this into a TV show. So that could be really cool.
What kind of format?
Maybe like a scripted series. Mm-hmm. So maybe all my stories will, you know, be reenacted.
Come to the screen. Yes.
Yeah.
To the horror of some people.
Right. But pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
So.
I would say. So is that looking fairly concrete or?
It's getting there.
That was Lauren Urasik, author of the book Popular, The Ups and Downs of Online Dating from the Most Popular Girl in New York City. And while OkCupid, along with Tinder, eHarmony, and others are the modern matchmakers of our time, the classic matchmaking industry still thrives in smaller communities. Israel Story host Mishi Harman takes us into one woman's matchmaking journey in Jerusalem.
I'm the only non-Orthodox person who lives on my street. And when I moved into this apartment a few years ago, I had just come back from 7 years abroad, and my mom was all excited that here, finally, I was coming back to Israel and I was going to find a nice Jewish girl. And it just so happened that in the apartment beneath me, in my apartment building, there were three Orthodox girls living there. And they were all in their mid to late 30s, single, and intensely looking for a match. So as you can imagine, matchmaking was the sole topic of conversation in their apartment, in my apartment, in the staircase. And the Orthodox dating scene in Nachlaot in Jerusalem is highly hierarchical. And unfortunately for my neighbors, who are really, really sweet girls and really attractive and pretty girls also, they were at the bottom of the pecking order because they were A, considered old, B, they had not grown up Orthodox, and C, they were, I hope they don't mind me saying this, presumably not virgins. As a result, even though they were really great girls, I really, really liked them, they would constantly be set up with all kinds of, you know, 60-year-old widowers, people with weird addictions, people with 11 kids, all kinds of really great catches. And what they would do is they would go to a matchmaker, a shadchanit, which is sort of like the analog version of OkCupid. And they would sit there with the shadchanit and tell them all kinds of things about themselves and what they were looking for. And the shadchanit would have lists and lists and lists of guys. And she'd be like, hey, how about Yitzhak? And then they would go out on these first dates with these guys. They were religious enough that they didn't want to be seen in public on these first dates. But also, on the other hand, they didn't want to be just in their room, obviously. So most of these first dates took place on our staircase. And I have a window that looks out right at the staircase, so I would be sitting in bed watching marathons and marathons of The West Wing, and I would hear through the window snippets of these first dates. And these first dates were like first dates from hell. If I ever went on a first date like this, I would never in a million years think of going on another second date. There was no chit-chat, no small talk whatsoever. They would be sitting on different landings, and they would get down to business immediately. It would be like, okay, so what is the kitchen going to look like? What kind of kashrut regulations are we going to follow? What's the Shabbat table going to look like? And meanwhile, on my computer, Jed Bartlett's kind of pounding on the podium and delivering these phenomenally eloquent liberal speeches.
There's evil in the world. There'll always be, and we can't do anything about it.
And I hear from outside, okay, so are you going to shave your head and wear a wig, or are you going to wear a regular head covering? And then usually the next morning I would bump into one of the girls on the staircase and we would have sort of a postmortem of the date. And just the way I realized that these dates sucked, so did they. So nothing really materialized from any of these dates. Now, one of the three neighbors was a girl called Meital. That's actually not her name, but it is for this story. And Meital was 39 years old, and she had grown up completely secular in Tel Aviv. She had lived with a boyfriend for 7 years, and they broke up when she was 29, and I guess that's when she became religious. Meital was very harsh in her religiosity. So, like, I have a dog, Nomi, and Nomi would run into their apartment all the time and jump on Meital's bed, and Meital would love Nomi and play with her all the time, and I kept on saying, Meital, you should get a dog, you love dogs so much. And she would say, oh no, religious people don't have dogs, which isn't even true. But that's sort of her perception of religiosity. Or she would constantly say, oh, I'm not looking for romance, I'm just looking for something very practical, for a partner. Anyway, Meital would go on these first dates from hell as well on the staircase. And one day, she was matched by the matchmaker with a guy called Dan. Now, let me just describe Dan a second. Imagine a Jewish Taliban warrior with a beard till his belly button, really, really long peot, side locks, and to cap it all off, Dan is a sheep herder from Bat Ayin, which is one of the more extreme settlements near Hebron. I saw Dan at the very beginning of the date, and I liked him immediately. Nomi, my dog, loved him because he smelled like sheep, so she was all on top of him. And I went up to my apartment and was on their first date. And their first date, like many of the other dates, was horrible. But for some reason, Meital decided that she was going to continue on with Dan. and they went out on maybe 5 or 6 dates, and I would say I was on maybe 3 or 4 of them. I should just say that the dates didn't get much better. They just clarified in great detail exactly what they thought the house would look like and how they would run it. So about 3 weeks later, I bumped into Meital on the staircase. And Meital said, "Mishi, you know, I've gone out with Dan 6 times already. I really need to decide whether I want to marry him." I was like, "Meital, that's completely crazy. Why don't you, I don't know, like maybe sleep with him beforehand?" Of course, Meital did not appreciate my suggestion. And instead of taking what I thought was good advice, she decided that she was going to travel to Uman in the Ukraine, and she was going to pray at Rabbi Nachman's tomb and get some enlightenment as to whether she should marry Dan or not. So that did not seem to me to be the best way to go about this, but she was quite convinced. So she came up to my apartment. She said that she was going to pray for me too, that I should also find a nice girl. And off she was to the Ukraine. She was there for a week. She prayed every single day over Rabbi Nachman's tomb. And she finally decided. She came back to Israel. She called up Dan and she told him that they were breaking up. So, okay, I was quite upset. I had liked Dan a lot, but now Dan was out of the picture. Meital continued going out on these first dates from hell, and nothing happened, nothing materialized. And then she was about to turn 40, and she became really anxious about this birthday and about the fact that she was still not married. So she went to see a rabbi whose specialty is name combinations. You tell him Isaac and Sarah, and he's like, "Yes, that's a good combination," or, "No, that's a horrible combination." So she goes into the rabbi, and this sounds a little bit like a joke, but she says, like, Rabbi, why can't I find a husband?" And he says, "Well, have you gone out with anyone recently?" And she said, "Yeah, well, I went out with this sheep herder, Dan." And he's like, "Dan?" And she says, "Yeah, Dan." And then the rabbi looks at her and he says, "Dan and Meital is the best name combination that I can imagine." And she's like, no, Rabbi, don't tell me this." And the rabbi's like, "Yeah, I'm telling you, Dan and Meital, it's like a match made in heaven." So Meital, instead of just saying that this guy's a total charlatan and storming out of his office, calls up Dan on the phone, tells him to get over there. Dan comes to the office, the rabbi tells him the same thing, and 2 weeks later, they got married. I tried to convince Dan to move into the apartment with the girls. I told him that it was a very European thing to do. They did not seem to think that this was such a good idea and moved to Bat Ayin. And even though I really tried for a while, it's hard to keep in touch with her. She seems to want to leave her bachelorette days behind her. So I don't really know what's going on with her in her life. But I imagine her on a Friday afternoon, sitting by a natural spring in the Judean hills near Hebron, breastfeeding her newborn baby. Dan is running around after all of the sheep, and some of their older kids are picking figs from the tree. Unfortunately for me, Meital's prayers in Uman didn't really help, at least yet. I'm still in the apartment, though, and who knows, maybe the magic of the staircase will strike again.
I am a honeybee, shut up from the colony, and they won't let me in. So I left the hive, they took away all my stripes and broke up.
The story was reported by Mishi Harman, host of the hit Israeli podcast Israel Story. It was a co-production with Tablet Magazine. And we're glad you made a date with our show this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1376.